Welcome to The Forum, your way to keep up with state and community leaders, experts, and local business leaders. This is your chance to hear from and talk to people that affect your life right here in Rim Country. You can express your opinions by calling 474-2427. And remember, the comments and opinions of guests and callers are not necessarily the opinions of KMOG. Welcome to Rim Country Forum.
Good morning, Rim Country. I'm Kenny Murphy. This is the Rim Country Forum. Our call-in number, as always, is 474-2427. And I want to start off by thanking our great sponsors, Owens Law Firm, Pinnacle Propane, Banner Medical Center, Dana Law Group, Arizona Institute of Dermatology, and Roof King. Today in the studio, we have Mayor Chris Higgins. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Ken.
How are you, sir?
Hey, doing great. Doing great.
Nice.
And
nice.
Just wanted to say thank you so much. I want to thank you and also Chief Engler, because I know he's your fill-in, for just doing a great job with this forum. I think bringing back professionalism and accountability. So I appreciate it. Just like Randy Roberson in the days and Dan Hoppala, all those guys.
Big shoes to fill there.
Hey, it's good. It's good.
Well, thank you, buddy. I appreciate it. We also have Jeffrey All here today. Hello, Jeffrey.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, good, good. So, Jeff, what's a little bit of your background and what do you do here in town?
Well, in town, I actually don't derive my income from town. I moved to Arizona in 2001 and moved to Payson about 10 years ago, just about exactly 10 years ago. I'm a private insurance adjuster. That is, we advocate on behalf of insureds for more large losses when the insurance company isn't treating them 100% fair.
I see. That's interesting. Yeah. Big money deals.
We do have minimum loss amounts, yeah, but that's just an economic reality.
And Chris, other than being mayor, what is your background in town? I know that you've been involved in radio and stuff like that. Where are you from and what have you been doing? Just to give people an update.
Oh, yeah. Real quick, born and raised in Pennsylvania, joined the Air Force 17, and was in the Air Force for 10 years, did cryptographic maintenance, served over in Saudi and also in Bosnia, and came back, went to work for Motorola here in Arizona down in Scottsdale. But my wife and I wanted to live up in Rim Country, so moved up to Pine, October of 99, and then eventually moved to Payson in 2003. Started working up here, worked at KMOG for almost 10 years, working with KRIM now for 10 years. Did landscaping for a while, worked for a doctor up here, did some other jobs, and then open Scoops ice cream and espresso. My wife and I had that for 10 years, and that's when I decided to run for council. Ran for council in 2014, got reelected in 2018, and then got elected mayor the last election. Similar path and trajectory that you took. Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah, I did two terms as a councilman, and then I was
vice mayor, and then
yep. Mayor, yeah.
So, yeah, it's a little interesting there.
Yep, well, it's great. So the issue that we're going to be talking about today, that at the Payson Tea Party here recently, Jeffrey All has written up a paper here regarding the sales tax increases, and there's several issues related to it, and I just want to kind of sum it up. In 2017, there was a 0.88% sales tax that was passed, and according to some of the information that's been provided, that the tax was supposed to pay off an unfunded liability the town had for personal retirement and to pay off a loan from the water department of $1 million and then some other things. Now, I don't know whether it's true or not, but it was my understanding is that that money was not used to pay off those things. And we can certainly get into that in a second, but I just want to finish summarizing this. So at the last council meeting, I believe this 0.88 was supposed to sunset in 2027, which would have ended the 0.88 sales tax. The town has voted using an emergency clause to continue that indefinitely now. So that is now a permanent part of our it's privilege tax, I think is the correct term. A privilege to pay the sales tax. In addition to that, the Capital Improvements Group got together here over the last few months and have recommended several projects to the town to fund for an event center, $15 million for a new police fire station, $15 million increase in street maintenance, a total of $39 million for a community center and a pool, et cetera. So we're talking $40 to $60 million in bonds, and want to increase the sales tax again by another 1%. That was going to be discussed recently, but now that's been pushed off until February, I believe.
February 6th.
And so Mr. All's contention is that because an emergency has been declared for the .88, it removes the public's ability to challenge that through a referendum. And so that's one of the questions. Why an emergency? And will the 1% be done with an emergency, which also would prevent the public from doing it? And Mr. All's contention also is that he believes that these things, when you have a huge expenditure, should go to a vote of the people. So that said, who would like to start?
Oh, you can go ahead.
Okay, perfect. So in addition to my professional life that we discussed earlier, I'm also the chairman of Transparent Payson. Transparent Payson was the group that placed two voter-approved initiatives on the ballot in 2018. I became involved in local affairs as a result of the .88 increase in 2017. So in 2018, there was a plan to bring in private development to Rumsey Park, and we addressed that through Props 401 and 402. Those were ultimately purportedly repealed by the town council. That matter is currently being litigated. The reason Transparent Payson and myself became interested in this tax increase is because it's clear from the CPAC studies and the review of the council actions that they're planning on issuing a bond set against the revenue that's generated via the increase in tax rate. The propositions addressed the issuance of a bond, so that's how I became involved. On the issue of the recent action,
401 and 2, just to clarify, 401 and 402 required the town, when they were passed overwhelmingly by a vote of the public at 60%, was to require the town to bring it to a vote of the public for any expenditure, what, over $1 million, or there was a limitation on it? Was it $1 million?
$1 million.
Well, it's not so much the dollar. What it is it in the finance world, there's a feature called a backstop or a shotgun feature. So you can issue a revenue bond without a general vote of the people. If you secure a general obligation bond, it must go to the public. So there's a way to issue a revenue bond, structure it with the backstop of a general obligation bond. So essentially, think of it like going to purchase a car. If someone co-signs for you, the dealership is not interested in the credit score of the person applying for the bond. They're interested in the backstop.
Okay.
So with a hybrid feature or a shotgun feature, it doesn't have to go to the vote of the people, but it has the same impact as a general obligation bond. So that's the kicker. That is the kicker. If it's a straight-up revenue bond, by all means, issue it. If it's backstopped, our thought is it needs to go to the vote of the people.
Okay.
Yeah.
So 401 and 402 was repealed because the town said, or the town attorney recommended to the town that 401 and 402 violate the Arizona State Constitution because we're not a charter city. We're a general law town that is not qualified to write its own ordinance for something like that. Is that your understanding, Mayor?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. So, and it's being litigated. So far, we don't know how that's going to turn out.
Well, I think there's a pretty good indication from the preliminary hearing, and I have a copy of that here, and from the judge that ruled on that, excuse me, it says, based upon the information above, court finds plaintiff has failed to establish the necessary elements of a preliminary injunction. Specifically, the court finds that there is insufficient legal authority to support a finding that plaintiff is likely to succeed in the trial on the merits. So, the initial preliminary injunction, the ruling, was in favor of the town when it came to the
now,
legality.
That's the injunction piece, right?
Correct. The legality of 401, 402, but also Voter Protection Act. He addressed that as well. So that was something that our legal counsel advised us from pretty early on. And our legal counsel Talking to our attorney, John Palladini, recently, they represent 15 municipalities across the state and have done assignments for nearly every municipality in the state. So they're a quality law firm, not a fly-by-night law firm or just one lawyer that gave us this recommendation, but a law firm that's used quite heavily throughout the state for municipality law.
Has this been attempted by any other towns you know of in the state?
Well, no, and that's where there weren't any cases. There weren't any cases that were cited by Transparent Payson's lawyer, but there's cases that were cited by our lawyers and the risk pool lawyers that are assigned to this case.
If we were a charter city or charter town, we would have a whole lot more latitude in creating our own ordinances and having a lot more, lot less restrictions from the state legislature, right?
There are some latitudes given to charter cities, but then there are some stronger restrictions put on charter cities as well. I know we had a presentation at one point with the previous council, I think two councils back, on the possibility or looking at becoming a charter city, what that would involve. And I remember a few of the council members being a little shocked at restrictions or limitations that a charter city has that we don't have. And they really didn't like that. They wanted sort of the best of both worlds. They wanted to be able to have the freedoms and liberties provided by general law town, but then also, you know, by a charter. They wanted a combination, and it doesn't work that way.
Okay. Well, on this point 88, back in May 4th, 2017, mm-hmm. Ordinance 888, and this is what Jeff has written in his position paper here. The town wanted, LaRon Garrett, the town manager at the time, said they wanted a 1% increase to cover the shortfall of the public safety personnel retirement system. It would also make payments to the water department loan, which was $1 million, and build the contingency fund up and do deferred maintenance. Now, that's from the minutes of the one of the council meetings.
Mm-hmm.
So the .88 passed. Was the money used to pay off the personnel retirement system fund, the water department, et cetera?
No, it was not used initially to pay off the water department loan. I know that has been paid off, but it took a lot longer than it should have to pay that off. And then in regards to the PSPRS, the initial request or what was recommended by staff, I should say, is 20 years. The repayment plan was over a 20-year period. The council, there wasn't a unanimous or overall consensus that we should vote to make that a 20-year period. And so what was voted on and the majority of the council approved 10-year, a 10-year sunset. But at that point, we knew and we realized that we wouldn't have that paid off in 10 years, and we would have to deal with it at some point, at a later point in time. And then there were other items that money was going towards. At that time, when we voted on the .88, we had reserve funds of approximately $100,000. So we have had at that time a policy, and we still have the policy, where we have to maintain a certain amount of reserve funds, contingency funds, and roll over so much into the next year's budget. At that time, we had $100,000. Right now, I have it on here, we have 1.5 in reserves, 1.3 in our contingency, and we're rolling over 5.5 million. So that's been built up over a period of time. But when that .88 was voted on, like I said, we had $100,000 in our reserves, no contingency, and I forget the amount that we were rolling over, but it was not that much.
Okay. So the other part of this is, once again, why use the emergency clause? I know there's several reasons that there is an emergency clause. One is, when you do an emergency clause, it there's no time delay for effectiveness, right? Mm-hmm. With, when you don't have an emergency and you pass an ordinance, it takes, what, 30, 60 days for it to become an ordinance. Mm-hmm. So the emergency clause makes it immediate. It also removes, in Arizona, under the Constitution, we have the right for initiatives and for referendums, correct?
Mm-hmm.
But this would eliminate that for, so the voters cannot take the town to a vote or force a vote on this 0.88, or if you do an emergency clause on the 1%, mm-hmm. the voters can't challenge that either, correct?
Through a referendum, correct.
So is your plan to do this with an emergency on the 1% as well?
I believe that's what we're looking at, yes. And I just, what I go back to, and I think back to 2018, and I think back to 2018, that election, and Jeffrey ran along with Dave Golombewski, Jim Ferris, and Tom Morrissey. And they ran, and I know, I have the recording of the group in here, and Tom stated that if elected, if a majority was elected, that the grocery tax would be repealed, that it would be removed, because it was stated at the Tea Party meeting, and it's stated, you know, quite often and around election time especially, how horrible the grocery tax is and how terrible it is. It's repressive. It's, you know, nowhere else, which isn't entirely true, but that was stated in 2018 that it would be removed. And I have the recording, and, you know, he was asked, Tom was asked, if you're elected, will you remove it? Yes, if I have the majority, I will remove it. So he got elected, Jim Ferris got elected, Susie Tubbs got elected, and they had the majority. And not once did it come up on an agenda. It obviously wasn't removed. It's still there. And what gets me is I don't recall, and I might be wrong, but I don't recall anyone going to council meetings to petition council members, the council members that ran on that, and told residents that this is what they were going to do. I only recall one person, Dave Golombewski, coming to council meetings to petition council members, the ones that were elected, saying that they were going to do this, to, you know, to do it, to actually
do. So it was a campaign promise that they never fulfilled.
So if it is, you know, that bad, and that, I also view that as, that's where the voters, they voted for individuals that said they were going to remove the grocery tax. They got elected, they got in those positions, and they didn't do what they said they were going to do.
All right. Well, we have a caller, gentlemen. Good morning. Welcome to Run Country Forum. Who's this?
Just on that last statement, do any of you do what you say you're going to do? Number one, the police and fire department should have been taken care of like we were told they were. Who decides where the money goes? I don't understand it. I don't know if it's Troy, who it is. But and my other thing is, when you have six people that control the will of the people that voted, is that not communism, to where you take the control of everything and you do what you want? And I'm just asking, I don't know, yeah. This seems really weird the way everything is changed now, to where the public and the people have no longer a say. We can just do an emergency clause and do away with it. You know, that just seems crooked to me, and that's just me.
Yes.
So I'll hang up and listen to you guys. Great show, and I believe you should have Tom in there to back himself up. I think there was a little more to that than the council, because they shut him down, and they also, during COVID, there was no council meetings where the people could go. So that's just me looking from the outside. Maybe wrong, only my opinion. Thank you, sirs.
Yep.
All right. Thank you for the call.
So during COVID, there were still council meetings. They were televised. People had every opportunity for public comments. They just could not come to the chambers during that time. So there were still public meetings, and people, again, could comment. They could attend via Zoom. They could drop off comments, email. So there was still access for the public to make comments. As far as communism, the communism comment, I just don't think the caller has an understanding of a representative form of government, where we're elected to represent the residents, and that's all residents. So in regards to this issue, emails that were received, I received the same amount of emails in support of what we're doing that were against what we're doing. At the council meeting, the individuals that spoke at the last council meeting, there were five individuals that spoke against what we're doing, and there were five individuals that spoke in favor of what we're doing. So it isn't a case where everyone in the community is against what we're doing and doesn't support what we're doing. That's just not true. And then also, going back to police and fire, this is something that really is upsetting to me, because we had an opportunity in 2019. We let the 0.12 sales tax sunset that was used for Fire Station 13. That 0.12% generated approximately $450,000 at that time. Today, it generated, like last year's budget, it would have generated about $750,000 of revenue. For a year, we were presented by our CFO at the time, Deborah Barber, the status of the town, the needs of the town, and one of the great needs was public safety. So we had presentations by police and fire on all of the needs. They showed us their equipment. Average miles on a police vehicle at that time was over 100,000 miles. That was the average. The fire department needs, the stations, the fire trucks.
No, the fire department always bought used trucks.
Well, and they had trucks that, one of their trucks, they were using vice grips to roll down the window in their truck. Mm. So, I mean, it was pathetic. It was horrible. So we had the opportunity. We had three options at that time, where with that 0.12 as a council, we had the ability to decide it's going to the sunset, we remove it, it will stay in place, and it'll be put towards public safety. It will go to public safety, capital improvements, to their needs. Or we could put it on a ballot. We could have put it on a ballot at that time. And the people could decide. And that's what I hear quite often from certain individuals, some people and groups, that the people need to decide. The people need to decide. Well, or we could do nothing and let it sunset, and that money goes away. So we did the third option. There were four council members at the time that voted to just let it sunset, to not even put it on a ballot. And myself and Steve Smith and Barb Underwood, we asked, wait a second. Again, you promote and you run on, we the people, we work for the people, let the people decide. But in that case, I feel that's a double standard where it's easy to say, oh, you're not letting the people decide on this tax, this sales tax increase. But when it comes to keeping a tax and having it go to public safety, which desperately needs it, no, we're not going to let the people decide. We're just going to let it sunset.
Wow. Well, we have another caller, Mayor Jeff. Good morning. Welcome to Rump Country Forum. Who's this?
Hi, this is Dave Golombieski, and Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas.
Mayor and Jeffrey. Yeah.
Good morning, Dave.
Host. Okay, Chris, I did continue to lobby to repeal and remove the grocery tax.
Yes.
Or at least let the people vote on it. And Mayor Morrissey did fail to remove that, but he did say he wanted to put it up for a vote of to the people, and that never happened. So I agree with you. You there now? What about your statement at the Veterans Hall coffee time that you said that you will not seek re-election and run again? Are you going to stick to that statement you made? And I disagree with you on your representative form of government, where the people don't get the vote once they're elected into the council. That is a major problem with our whole society, is we let seven dwarfs run the town instead of 7,000. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thank you. It's the people that elect the seven dwarfs, and that's kind of how that works, Dave. Is interesting. I have to applaud Dave. I mean, he really held those council members that said that accountable. He tried to hold them accountable. And again, even to this day, if there are individuals elected in the next election and they campaign on lowering the taxes, removing the grocery tax, they have the ability to do that. The council has the ability to
sure,
do that.
Sure it does.
And I know
it
the
is
other
a regressive tax. The, I mean, any tax that's equal across the board, it always hits people with their low income more than anybody.
Well, that's where, do you know how many communities in Arizona have a grocery tax?
Yep,
how many
municipalities? A lot do. Not
they
all
do.
Of them have repealed
and
it.
And that was something that, so printing out, you know, the grocery tax, I have a list right here of all the communities. And that was something that the governor vetoing that bill.
Yeah, the governor just vetoed that statewide. Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Vetoing that bill.
Good
and,
Democrat.
Well, and the thing is, though, that bill and I don't, this is the part I don't agree with, is taking control away from local governments. The residents of the community elect the council members. They elect the people that are representing them. So in local governments, to take away the control, and that's something that Arizona is really good at. The state is good at taking control away from local governments. And this would have been another example. And you look at communities, so us, do you know what percentage of our revenue is from the grocery tax?
No.
Over 15%. And there's communities that it's 20 or 30% of their total revenue. So if it is a problem like Taylor, Arizona, 35% of their revenue comes from grocery tax. So if it is an issue, again, leave the control with the local residents where they elect the people that are representing them. They elect them. They can get in and they can remove that tax.
All right.
Put it on a ballot.
Okay, we have one more phone call, then I'm going to go to commercial break. Good morning, Logan Run Country Forum. Who's this?
Yeah, this is Jim. This is Jim Ferris, and Chris brings up my name that I wanted to eliminate the grocery tax. I never campaigned on it, never promised it. You know, if he's going to vote my name and tie me to some promise or some policy, then he better be accurate, and he's not. And this has happened frequently too, and trying to put on the $57,000 amount that we paid to Snell and Wilmer over our attorney's, debacle is baloney also. And I think I've explained that away multiple times, and they don't seem to understand. But this 0.88, when it was going to come on, the people are saying, oh, but we only need 0.35 to retire the arrears that we had in the PSPRS. And, here we are. How many years after? It was 2017, and here we are. We have more money in arrears with our PSPRS than we did then. So we took that money that was said that we were told was going to go to the PSPRS and used it for other purposes. And, let's get the record right and let's get it straight and don't put words in other people's mouth that wasn't there, Chris. Let's be honest and transparent. That's all I got to say.
Thank you, Jim. And I apologize. Jim didn't say those things, but he was in that group. So I apologize. So he might have had different thoughts and opinions as Jeffrey as well. But they were part of that group. And the message was, elect me, elect these people, and this is what, we can do.
All right, I'm going to go to a break real quick here because I'm going to run out of time if I don't here. So we'll be right back talking to Mayor Chris Higgins and Jeffrey Aul discussing the upcoming 1% sales tax and the new additional 1.88% sales tax that has been added back and will not sunset in a few years. All right, welcome back to Room Country Forum. It's 38 degrees. We have Jeffrey Aul here, who is discussing, or who had written a position paper regarding the sales tax increases and where the town's going. We have Mayor Chris Higgins here to discuss the town's position on this stuff. We also have a caller. Let's go to the caller. Good morning. Welcome to Room Country Forum. Who's this?
This is Mike. I had a question for Jeffrey Aul. Is Payson going to be allowed to die on the vine because of his obstructionist?
Okay, Mike, thanks. Go ahead.
All right, well, a couple of things. I haven't had the opportunity to speak here, so I took a few notes. Mayor Higgins discussed the injunction. There is no current case law on the application of Proposition 105, Voter Protection Act, as it relates to municipalities. We are petitioning the Arizona Attorney General to provide us with a position statement on that. We're hopeful to get that. That there's no case law doesn't make our position invalid. It merely means that it has not been resolved yet. The position of the town regarding charter city versus common law city is interesting. Once Proposition 105 applies to the local people or a local election, their position kind of falls apart because then the question is no longer are they allowed to do it. The question then becomes, are the citizens not allowed to do it under the Arizona Constitution? So, it's an interesting argument that the town has made. Ultimately, we think this will be decided in the Arizona Supreme Court. All right, next thing, the grocery tax. The grocery tax, in my estimation, is an immoral tax. You're asking people to give up a fair amount of their money. I actually put together some information. Assume you're a single mother with two kids. You're collecting, at the end of a year, Payson collects about 1.92% of her take-home pay on the grocery tax. Now, all of that's, I can document all of that, so it's just not some wild number that I came up with. The 0.88 allocation was, in fact, sold to the town of Payson and the citizens to pay down the retirement liability. That matter ended up going through a couple of revisions. In August of 2018, Council Member Sterner asked the very pointed question, is this money earmarked? Mr. Garrett, town manager at the time, said it's in the budget. So the money that was allocated was never earmarked, and it was transferred to the general fund. So it was never paid off appropriately. And I think Mayor Higgins agrees to that. It was never allocated to that. One of the things that's come up in this conversation is representative democracy. And Dave will say, well, seven dwarves. I disagree with that. I think that's disrespectful. When
Without Snow White being involved here.
Well, exactly. But when Mayor Higgins says the state takes away local control and that the people elect the representatives, it seems disingenuous to the extent that the town removed voter-enacted propositions. So the town loves to say that we're elected representatives. Our group advocates for direct democracy. One vote, one person. So it's disingenuous to say we need local control, but then they remove local control.
All right, we have a caller on the line. Let's take that call. Good morning. Welcome to Room Country Forum. Who's this?
You cut me off the last time.
You're already cut off, Mike. You're not allowed to call in here, and you know you're not allowed to call, so don't call.
With the 401 and 402, it isn't a case where the council on its own or just looking at this said, hey, we need to get rid of these things. But it was our legal counsel that was looking at this and looking at what we were doing, and really the purchase of the fire trucks is what kind of spurred this, and a purchase of $1.5 million buying the two trucks together. That's what created the conversations and our legal counsel to look at this closer and to come up with the position where they recommended that we repeal those. Just real quick with Jim, with the PSPRS. Since the adoption of the 0.88, the town's paid $17,191,663 to PSPRS. Now that is to not just to the unfunded or to the debt, but that's in total. So I don't want to try and mislead or say that, you know, anyone say that I'm misleading people, but that is how much has been paid to the PSPRS. So
Since what year?
Since the adoption of the 0.88
of 2017. Okay.
So our current unfunded accrued liability is $18.8
million.
Holy. So now this, what's important is that's based on our current public safety staffing. So I guess how they manage this, keep track of this, the PSPR system, the people, is they just have that total. So in that total is part of our funded or the debt that we said we need to do the 0.88 to repay the debt. So that's tracked by a percentage. So 41.33% was unfunded or was a debt that we owed when the state said, hey, this got messed up, and every municipality has this debt, or anybody that has public safety has this debt. So that has increased to 54.98%, so 13.65%. It has been paid towards that. And again, the projections for repayment is 2036 based on our current payments, based on how that fund, also the returns on that fund, which are out of our control. And that's, you know, just, again, out of our control. So another thing, though, talking to Chief Staub this morning, something that was mentioned and has been talked about is contracting with Rural Metro, contracting with Gila County Sheriff's Office for public safety, where we don't have to have a fire and police department. As you know, I mean, being mayor, you know that we don't have to have those. We can contract. So even when we contract, we're still on the hook for the PSPRS. We still pay that. It doesn't mean that we're out of that. We still have to pay that PSPRS. Also, you know, looking at Fountain Hills Public Safety, you know how much they pay, their annual? Last year they paid for public safety?
No.
$10
million. Wow.
$10 million. And they just got rid of Rural Metro, where Rural Metro, I know it was mentioned, Jeffrey mentioned in the presentation at the Tea Party that, you know, when we were looking at a fire authority, that we really didn't look into Rural Metro, ask them, communicate with them at all. Rural Metro, you know how many municipalities they provide service for now?
Hardly any.
One.
Is Scottsdale still?
No.
No, the Scotts got rid of them?
Well, Scottsdale didn't get rid of them. They got rid of Scottsdale. Because Scottsdale said, you have to provide a service up to this level. And Rural Metro said, okay, and they signed a contract, I guess, but then they ended up backing out because they couldn't provide service to that level. So they actually left Scottsdale.
All right, we got another call. Good morning. Welcome to Rick and Forum. Who's this?
Good morning. My name is Paul.
Hey, Paul.
And I want to thank you for having this program because it's important that people need to call out the misrepresentations and false statements that are made all the time. I'm going to bring up something that Chris Higgins had mentioned earlier that, in my opinion, is patently false. He stated that the 0.88% increase was never intended to pay off the PSPRS debt. Now, I'm going to read something here very quickly from the February 21st, 2017 minutes of the town council on their town website. It says, quote, Mr. Garrett explained the original loan. Now, first of all, we're talking about a water payment. Town took out a $1 million loan from the water department in 2008. Now, this is 2017, 9 years later. Mm-hmm. Mr. Garrett explained the original loan was in 2008 for $1 million. It was paid from the Water Department Enterprise Fund to the General Fund. The intent was to pay the loan back over a 10-year period. It has been 9 years, and the town has not made any payment on it yet. The town has paid interest on the loan each year, but has not paid on the principal. That's from the town's website. Mm-hmm. Now, you go on to the March 2nd town council minutes, and it says, and this is a quote from Lauren Garrett, quote, the tax increase would be for the PSPRS and to repay the water department loan. That is what the people were promised. The people were promised it would sunset. The people said it would be, they needed, the town stated it needed 0.42% to pay down to zero the PSPRS debt in 10 years. Fast forward 7 years later, we owe more than we did before. And the town received over twice as much money from the tax increase than they needed. Now, another thing that he stated, he's talking about the purchase of $1.5 million on two fire trucks, and that would be illegal because of the propositions. I doubt he ever read the proposition, because Proposition 402 states it would come into play for the purchase, maintenance of facilities. Okay? Fire trucks are not a facility, they're a vehicle. It wouldn't have nothing to do with it. There was no loan involved in it. And like Jeffrey says, it was for the, it's not $1 million. Chris keeps bringing up $1 million. It's baloney. It's baloney. Has nothing to do with it. All it is a threshold when it would kick into place. We had to put a threshold in there. 402 only comes into play when there is a revenue bond put out with the backstop feature in it, where it would revert to a general obligation bond if the revenue was not sufficient to pay off the loan. And some of the things that they're doing, like the Rumsey Park debacle that they had 5-6 years ago, that would have never paid it off. The people in the town would be stuck on the hook for it. In my opinion, the reason why the town keeps using the emergency ordinance is because they know damn well these things would never fly on their own merit. The people don't want them. The people don't believe the town council anymore. And in my opinion, the things that they're putting out there are only half-truths at best. They're filled with innuendo. And like even this morning, they keep talking about Scottsdale. They keep talking about bullet. We're talking about Payson here. I don't give a rat's butt what happens in communities down the valley. We're talking about Payson here. We have a $77 million budget. 3 years ago, it was about $30 million. We've over doubled it in 3 years. And people keep screaming for roads. They keep coming up with excuses why they can't do anything for the roads. But instead of roads, let's build an aquatic center. Let's do all these wonderful things.
Yeah, I mean, they just go on and on.
Okay.
I mean,
I'm done.
All right. Thank you, Paul.
Yeah. And so the point 8A, I want to address that. So the point 8A, what was said was at the time that the 0.88, all of it would go to repay the PSPRS, and that wasn't true. That's never what was stated.
No, there are several things to pay off.
Exactly. That it would go towards different things. Exactly, and that's what I was saying.
The point is that it didn't.
Some of it did go towards that, and some of it went to other things. And also stating that the PSPRS debt is the same. He just said right. It's the same. That is not true. That's just not true. It's not the same.
It's actually higher now than it was then.
Right.
So that is the truth. Mr. Higgins just gave us the total debt.
Yeah, no.
It's actually higher now than it was then.
Yes, but
our firemen and policemen have not increased significantly. Our headcount has not increased significantly. The promise was to pay it off. Real quick, while I have the mic, so we covered that one. One of the things.
I'm gonna go to this break, you guys. I've only got a few minutes left, so I got to take a commercial call. So we'll be right back, and I've got a caller on the line. I'll go to you as soon as we come back, Jeff. All right, it's 39 degrees in Rim Country, and we have a caller on the line. But Jeff, go ahead. I cut you off, so go ahead and make your point there, real quick.
Real quick, because we're coming up on the hour here. The PSPRS again. The debt is higher now than it was when they passed the 0.88. The use of the emergency ordinance was the original discussion here. So this ordinance for the 0.88 was passed in 2017. It sunsets in 2027. All of a sudden, it became an emergency because 5 years in, it's going to sneak up on us in 5 years. Now, the use of the emergency ordinance, Mr. Higgins said, yes, we do that so that it can't be subject to a referendum. The last time, when they repealed Prop 401 and 402, they used an emergency ordinance. A co-plaintiff who subsequently dropped out of the suit wanted to file a referendum. She was denied a serial number. We went and applied for a serial number. Now, to avoid this sticky conversation, they actually issued us a serial number to allow us to circulate petitions. It's a Herculean task. During the holidays, it's not going to occur. But I'm going to read to you a quick response from the town clerk that said, quote, I am not required to provide you with a written explanation about the placement of the referendum on the ballot since no denial or rejection has been made. Because essentially what we asked was, if we secure the 800 signatures required, will it be placed on the ballot? So they're trying to circumvent whether or not it's subject to a referendum. We'll take Mayor Higgins at his word, it's not subject to a referendum. So we come back to this, the issue for today, the use of the emergency ordinance. A 10-year clause became an emergency. So the town used the emergency ordinance on Prop 401 and 402. They enacted Prop 401 and 402 in 2019. I suspect there was plenty of time to address it between 2019 and 2023 without the use of an emergency ordinance. So the town uses an emergency ordinance when they don't want to let the people vote. One of the things that the town is saying with the 1% in February, they will secure a $60 million bond that will subject each household to roughly $7,500 in debt. So our position has always been, put it on the ballot. It doesn't appear that the town wants to put that on the ballot. The second issue is that there's always a common theme in town, deferred maintenance. They can't take care of the things they have, so now they want shiny new things and say they need these things because of deferred maintenance. So it's disheartening when the town says, well, we need to do this, we need to do it on an emergency, and we're going to hold out police and fire as the reason for the emergency, and then preclude the citizens' input.
All right. All right. I'll let you make your point there, Jeff. We have a caller. Good morning. Welcome to Ring Country Forum. Who's this?
Good morning, Kenny. This is Bob. How are you, gentlemen?
Good, Bob. How are you?
Hey, like all townships, cities, municipalities, and government entities, you guys don't have an income problem. You have a spending problem, gentlemen. And let's look, for example, what has been cost to the taxpayer in Payson, Arizona, for the cost of the university property that was developed and sits vacant at today. Across the street from that property is a new park. What is that going to cost when it's completed, since it still seems to be a never-ending construction project? What's the cost to the taxpayer of the land you recently purchased on Main Street? I believe it was 8 acres. Who benefited from the sale of these real properties, gentlemen? I think that is the real question. Thank you. Have a happy New Year.
All right. Thanks, Bob.
Yeah, I can say I believe the people that benefited from the purchase of the 8.5 acres is the town of Payson. And residents were looking at a workforce housing project on that property, American Gulch. That's part of that property
as well.
It's all
part of the Main Street redevelopment project.
Yeah, Main Street redevelopment. And one thing I wanted to say, you know, something that Paul brought up is he said, I don't know, he doesn't give a damn about, you know, these other communities. At the Tea Party meeting, he's the one that brought up Fountain Hills and was comparing us to Fountain Hills and their public safety and their budget. And also it was brought up, you know, looking into rural metro. That's the only reason I bring that up, is because these things are mentioned, you know, in different meetings. But yet the numbers, no one, you know, knows the numbers. Like, you know, the amount spent for Fountain Hills public safety, they didn't say the numbers. They didn't say how many millions. They didn't say that rural metro was being dropped by Fountain Hills and they're starting their own fire department starting the first of this year.
One comparison that I think is important is that, according to what Jeff has written here, if we pass the 1% in addition to this 0.88 and you eliminated other towns that do not have a sales food tax, we would be number 2 in the state for sales taxes. And
looking at that list, we would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
If you don't count the food tax.
Yeah,
7th. Seventh out of what, 198?
No, out of 91.
191?
No, 91. 91, well, not
hold,
a...
Hold yeah. on a second. We will be 7th highest taxed district in Arizona. There are probably 450 or so taxing districts.
You're including fire districts and everything else. I got you.
Well, just TPT districts.
Okay.
They overlap. Payson will be 7th highest in the state at a rate of 10.48%. As long as we're bringing up meetings and such, you were there. The Tea Party meeting, Mayor Higgins referred to people as a, quote, angry mob. He said that I was inciting an angry mob.
Yeah.
That still has not been addressed in any fashion. Mayor Higgins was provided the opportunity to apologize to the people in attendance. He chose not to.
Yeah.
Here's your opportunity.
Well, I have the recording, and I'll play it if you want me to. I'll play it right now because it's. I played it for a lot of people, and they thought it was really funny because right after I did say, and you had asked me, you said, "Hey, we have Mayor Higgins here, and would you like to respond to any of these things?" And I said no, and people started murmuring a little bit, and then I said, "No, I'm not going to get in front of this little mob that you two got riled up." And for 30 seconds, I have it recorded. Almost everyone in the room was yelling at me. And then somebody had to scream real loud to restore order because there was no order in the meeting at all. And then they continued on, and I said, and I will talk with anyone. I'll sit down and meet with anyone, but to get up in front of the group in that environment, no, I'm not going to do it. But I will sit down. I've met with so many people. I go to so many events. I'm all over town at town events, sporting events, everywhere. And I talk to a lot of people out at restaurants. People come up to me and they say, "Hey, I have a question. I don't want to interfere. I don't want to interrupt your meal. I don't want to bother you." And I'll talk to people. But as far as being yelled at by people, people in the audience were saying, "Oh, what a bunch of idiots." And, the comments made on social media by so many people. Oh, the clowns, little dwarfs. It's so immature. It's so childish. I mean, I'll have a conversation. I'll meet with anyone. And I do it all the time.
You came on the show today.
Yeah.
And yet he still hasn't apologized for calling a room full of people an angry mob.
Yeah, because they proved my point.
All right. We have another caller. Good morning. Welcome to Room Country Forum. Who's this?
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Higgins. Good morning, Plaintiff Al. This is Jeff. How you doing?
Good. I've got about a minute left, Jeff. Be brief.
All right, fine. The retirement system is a state-run obligation we're embroiled in, and we can't change it. It's not the town. It's the state. And if you want to change that, you better lobby your legislators. And with that 0.88 money, we've made double and triple payments to try and simply get caught up. And the bleed over some additional money we used for Jeffrey for maintenance, street, and first responder needs. It represents 31.8% of our budget. And Chris and council, thank you for protecting our future, because it'd be devastating if that went away. And Jeffrey, you should embrace the 1% taxes coming forward, because it addresses maintenance and streets. And Bob, our town does not have a sales tax spending problem. It is a tax problem. We've never collected enough money to run the show. And even when 1% is not enough, everybody knows this, and I don't understand the objection. So the majority of the people agree with Chris and the council that it needs to be done. And we look forward to finally doing something instead of sitting on our hands complaining about maintenance when we're going to provide the ability to get it done. So I don't understand the arguments, and I think they serve no legitimate purpose other than just to once again complain without solutions. So you guys have a good day and keep up your revenge tour.
Okay, thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it. I'm going to finish these. I'm going to do these commercials real quick, and then come right back. All right, we're going to finish up here. Go ahead, Jeff. We're going to let you go ahead.
Thank you. So I think that was Jeff Robbins there. Mr. Robbins says that the 1% will pay for street maintenance. True statement. They're going to pull out a $60 million bond, and he says the majority of people support that idea. Simple enough. Put it to a vote. We've always said if they put it to a vote and the people approve it, then let's have it. Unfortunately, the town will not do that because there is not support in the town to incur a $60 million bond for an aquatic center and various other things. So it seems unreasonable that they say, well, the majority of people support this, but yet they won't put it to a vote. That's all we're saying. Put it to a vote. That's about it. It's curious, the arguments that come out and things in support of this. If we are, in fact, a democracy, one person, one vote, then we should put it to a vote.
Okay, well, technically, we're not a democracy. We are a representative republic, but go ahead, Chris.
Hey, just final comment. I was reading, and there's been different sports figures that have said this over the last few years, and it made me think of something, but it the comment was, and it's in regards to sports, losers focus on winners, winners focus on winning. But I thought of the town, and over the 20-plus years been in town here, what I've seen in this community is there are the non-doers. Non-doers focus on doers, and doers focus on doing. And it just really hit home, or, you know, thinking about that, because being involved with different nonprofits, coaching in Little League, just town government, everything the town has going on, there's been people over the years that are just quick to point fingers, criticize, say, you're doing this wrong, how dare you do this, and we don't agree with this, and so on. You know what I say to those people? Get out and do something. Get out and do something. There's so many organizations, things, the school district, so many things that you can be doing in town, not just sitting on social media and kind of, I don't know, complaining about everything. I mean, social media, Facebook, and Nextdoor, it's insane how much time is just wasted on those platforms. People complaining. Get out and do something. Make the town better.
It's a great little town to do things for.
Oh, it is.
It really is.
And actually, we did do something. We passed two propositions. The town repealed them. The town takes actions in complete contempt of the voters and the voters' authority. So we did do something. So that argument doesn't really work.
All right. Well, gentlemen, I really appreciate you guys being on. We were 5 minutes late into this thing here. So we've had Jeffrey All. We've had Mayor Chris Higgins. I think it was a good debate, gentlemen. Some great callers. I really appreciate you guys coming on here. It's going to be on the council agenda coming up, 1% sales tax increase. You might want to let the council members know how you feel let them know what you think about it. And we have a new year coming up, and I'm not going to see here. Wendy Rogers is going to be here next Tuesday, and it will be a brand new year, and I'm followed by the Diner and Brandon Iron. And I want to thank our sponsors, Owens Law Firm, Pinnacle Propane, the Banner Medical Center, Dana Law Group, the Arizona Institute of Dermatology, and Roof King. Thank you very much. Happy New Year, and God bless America.
Thank you, Kenny.
Thank you.